fired Mishkas HaSofer and said that Mishkas HaSofer, there is now a sign hanging up that on the I haven't gone to check, so I can't say if it's true or not.
It
it might be spurious, but the sign hanging up banning the sale of Rabbi Nachman Slipkin's books.
Really?
Because he claims that the universe is millions of years or billions of years old.
So does Yehuda Levy, and they sell his books.
Well, so they, I can't, they obviously don't know that. That's
doesn't buy Dr. Schroeder's argument.
Yeah. So it's very timely to speak of the Asian universe because this is happening in Muncie. Controversy is brewing in Muncie as we speak.
They used to sell those books on the movie.
And I guess they have to have an
explanation
for why they're not selling it.
Yeah.
So, again, I need to check, but let's assume that the person told me the truth. Anyway, so obviously there are at least some portions of the Jewish community, at least those which inhabit Lishkas HaSofer from time to time, who are who believe with great determination that the Asian universe is specifically 5,765 years old. And I think if you ask most kids, let's say, who went through the yeshiva system, then they'll also answer you that the universe is 5,765 years old, because that's how the calendar which we use dates the age of the universe. I should add that interesting that the calendar we use it today is relatively recent, meaning that at the time of the Gemara, they didn't count the Bria Solam. They counted from the beginning of Alexander's reign in Alexander's reign over the world, specifically including land of Israel, commenced. That was called Minyan Shtaros, the count of documents. So any documents we have which have year one, year two, year three, after Alexander took over, and this is like an honor for Alexander that we're going to count for any, you know, he spared the Jews, so it's nice to us. So therefore we count from the date of his ascension. Other sources used to count to Yetzias Mitzrayim, the time when they left Egypt, which is, also date which is easy to figure out. That's when they started counting, was Yetzias Mitzrayim. The counts which we have today is it's not clear when it came into use, but at least I have not researched the issue. But it's certainly relatively recent. By that I mean within the last 1,000 to 2,000 years. It wasn't at the time that we left. It wasn't the time that we left. So it's probably about sometime after year 500. The reason why they started using Bria Ha'olam is because the assumption is because many stars became too obscure a date to use. And it's hard to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, because you can't start year zero for Yetzias Mitzrayim. So therefore, since people have counted back to Adam HaRishon, figured out, you know, when Adam HaRishon lived, so therefore we use Adam HaRishon as the basis. The interesting thing also is that when we write a ksuba, or a get, or any other documents, we write Mishnah, Chameshes HaLofim, Shvamio, Chameshav HaShishim, year 5,765, so the count which we count here. So, it's kind of strange language, but what it means to say is that, I don't know what they, don't know if this is precisely accurate, not precisely accurate, but this is, this is the way we count here, so that's the way we date this document, okay? So the way we count the minyan sha'anumonim kah. So the question is, what happened 5,765 years ago, and what alternatives are there? Now, to begin with, getting back to the approach which I mentioned before, which is world 5,765 years ago was created, this approach has to deny, almost rocks back and barrel, that science and scientific inquiry and scientific analysis have any validity whatsoever. If you assume that the world is only that old, and it's overwhelming evidence which the scientific community alleges to exist, that the world is older than that, then, you have to just discard science and say, forget it. Science is crazy, they're totally wrong, they're morons, they're oxycodone, so therefore, we...
Airplanes work out of a miracle.
What?
Airplanes are a miracle.
Right, so therefore we just discard what they say, and we have our Torah, which is true, and, tough on them. Yeah.
It sounds like Rashi is
says one day, Yom Echad, in the Bereshit, there's a Rashi that says that during that time it could have been millions or billions of years.
No, Rashi doesn't say that.
I'm not sure there's Rashi.
No, nobody says until the 20th century. But I'll come to that. That's one of the answers. That's one of the resolutions. We're just starting. Okay? Okay, we'll come to that. But it's not Rashi. Now, another point that you made is that this has, the age of the universe has nothing to do with evolution. Evolution and age of the universe are two separate things. One can accept that the world is billions of years old and say evolution is a bunch of baloney. I should say macroevolution as opposed to microevolution. Microevolution is a fact, meaning...
We see
fruit flies change from generation to generation, right? We see that certain things do change. But we've never seen macroevolution. We've seen on all the generations of fruit flies they've raised since Darwin, not one of them has become a house fly, right? Were that to happen, then we'd have problems. But this has never happened, and we don't expect it's ever going to happen. So evolution is not relevant to discussion of age of the universe. You can accept evolution, you cannot accept evolution, you know, whatever you want, but the age of the universe is totally separate from evolution.
If you accept that evolution, are you outside orthodoxy?
No, but I would say that you're a fool.
Oh.
I would agree.
Yeah. Evolution is more of a religion than most religions.
More of orthodoxy.
It's an act that requires a tremendous leap of faith to assume that processes which we've never observed happening actually occurred, and occurred millions and billions of times in extremely ever complex ways. That's a pretty big leap of faith.
Well, how do you account then for the development of different species over time?
God directed it. It's highly unlikely it happened. It certainly could happen, but God direction just can't happen by chance.
So it's divine evolution.
Divinely governed evolution is not a problem.
And divine evolution is distinct from scientific evolution in what way?
If scientific evolution assumes that positive mutations occurred and recurred countless times, replicated themselves many, many times, and occurred in grand ways which nobody's ever observed nor seen to occur.
Divine evolution is
described by divinity.
So divine evolution is bang from one species to another.
Oh, anyway, they go bang. That's common scientific. I was teaching in high school today. I teach in this modern Orthodox high school in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and they went to high school evolution, so they can't tell the difference between natural selection and current mutation theory. I told them, listen, mutation theory is one thing, but natural selection is really, really dumb. Natural selection is Darwinian evolution, that's classical evolution, in which species develop over time because of survival of the fittest. And the way a species develops, is that one generation, some species, which was blind to that point, had a birthmark here, like a pigmentation in the skin. And the next generation, that pigmentation carried over. In other words, it wasn't just a skin spot, it helped out, introduced itself into the makeup, magically so, of that animal. And again, then the next generation became a little bit more developed, a little bit larger again. Well, all of a sudden, the cells in that pigmentation started specializing. They started performing first cones and then rods, somehow knowing that the eventual result would be an eye. That's extremely untenable position.
No one holds it anymore.
Yeah. Not even scientists. Right. So scientists nowadays hold that there was some mutation which occurred, which actually brought about an eye fully formed in some entity, and this got passed on from generation to generation. So things have changed since you were in high school, I think. Maybe after the age of the universe, we'll talk about evolution. But they no longer hold natural selection. In any event, so evolution? Yes, no, maybe. It's a separate question. The evidence of the age of the universe is a far more solid basis than the evidence of this evolution, because the dating methods which they use, they have been able to predict in a laboratory. And I want to stress because it's an important point. It's real scientists like Ron. Looked down on biologists They look down on biologists and say, biology is not really a science. Right? You want to tell them?
Yeah, I say that.
What? You want to tell them why you say this?
Because it's like, you don't really, like, you can't, there's no mathematics that describes what's going on.
Right.
It's not fundamental laws of
not
nature.
Not provable, observable.
It's just observing something and thinking, seeing how it does it again and again, but it's not being able to predict something, and you're not formulating any fundamental laws of nature by looking at it.
Right. The basic premise of the science is that you can, on the basis of a hypothesis, you can construct an experiment in which you can predict a result, and this result will occur only by an explanation, or preferably, I guess, probably, by an explanation which comes from your hypothesis. Once your hypothesis is proved in that way by predicting successfully what will be found or will occur, then it can be considered to be a theory, and if you are zoicha, you marry someday, it may become a law as well. But in biology, there's no way anybody can ever prove that, or rather, no, it hasn't been proven, and probably will never be proven, that there is any way to make a fruit fly into a house fly. Let's start manipulating the genes, which of course indicates human intervention, which is on small scale the same thing as divine intervention. So the idea of biology in general is, you know, other scientists put biology, look down on biologists. But the dating methods which are used to date things as very, very old have been subject to rigorous scientific analysis and testing. And nobody's been ever able to change the rate at which these substances decay, whether it's carbon-14, krypton-argon, whatever they use, and produce indications through the half-life of the amount of time which has passed since whatever thing, rock or dirt, no, just rock is mostly what they do, rock or ore has come into being. So therefore, the basis of saying that the universe is old is much more solid than saying anything about evolution having occurred. Okay? This is important to know. Most people don't make this distinction, but now you will. Okay? So age of the universe is an issue. Evolution is a non-issue. We can discuss it anyway and see what Judaism has to say about it, but not for today, perhaps after we finish age of the universe. So there are several approaches in Judaism towards the age of the universe, and as I said, the most basic one, which probably most people would tell you, is that science is all wrong. However, for people who are somewhat familiar with science, which, you know, Baruch Hashem and many yeshivas, they don't touch, but for those of us who are somewhat familiar with science, so then there is a problem, because you see in scientific theory holds that the universe is very, very old. And it's hard to reconcile that with saying that there's a young world that was created 5,765 years ago. Okay. So there's several theories which deal with this. There's several approaches deal with this. One of them, which has to do with last week's parsha, is a good place to start, which is that the marble changed the way things work. The flood changed nature. How so? For example, it's the Sfarnu in last week's parsha says that until the Mabul, the Earth's axis was like this vis-a-vis the sun, perpendicular to the sun. And at the time of the Mabul, whatever happened, let's say, for argument's sake, a comet hit the Earth, or whatever happened at the time, it caused the Earth to go like this, to tilt on its axis. And that, therefore, before the Mabul, there were no seasons. Whatever, since the world was constantly, everything was equidistant from the sun at all times, right? Everything was the same distance throughout the year because it was going like this around the earth. So therefore, the rays of the sun hit everything the same way all year round as the earth went around the sun. So therefore, there were no seasons. It's only because the earth had to tilt. And, you know, in the summer, excuse me, in the northern hemisphere summer, this side is closest to the sun. And the southern and in the northern hemisphere is winter. This side is closer to the sun, right? It goes around like this. Only because of that, so are there seasons? Beforehand, there were no seasons. So some people say, well, if the Mabul affected such a radical change in how the world works, so it could be that everything which is assumed to have occurred much earlier occurred really in the time during up till the Mabul, until the year 1656, according to the count from Adam, and that then it got skewed because of the things that happened in Mabul, and therefore looks like it's millions or billions of years old. But in fact, all those things which existed, dinosaurs and the like, they existed in that span of time between year 0 and year 1656.
How does that account for the fact that using simple parallax, you can see objects in space using the rays of light coming from them and determine that they're more than 5,000 to 6,000 light years away? Using simple geometry and rays of light.
I don't think this approach accounts for that. I don't think they go by the, but they haven't taken into account the redshift and all that kind of stuff. No, that hasn't, you're right, they don't take that into account. That's a good question. Maybe we have to say the whole universe was surfaced to you by this, by the Mabul. Yeah.
Where are you getting the, under movement of the Earth, or the, it seems, I'm not sure about the source, that it's from science?
That what?
I'm a physics major, I know that that happened, and it keeps, going to keep happening.
The Sfarnu says it, a commentary on the Torah.
There's also a Torah, okay, so it's a source.
A commentary, a later source.
Okay.
You know, like 16th century, not much earlier, but 16th century. Sfarnu, at that time, you know, the...
There's a rate that's... scientifically speaking, there's a rate that's still happening.
Okay. So the Sfarnu lived after Galileo. When was Galileo? I forget what years he was, but it was like late 1500s, I think Galileo left. So I think Galileo was already on the scene, and Galileo was in Italy, and the Sfarnu was also in Italy. So, you know, could be they had some, not interaction, but could be they heard Sfarnu heard Galileo, and therefore... He is the first one, if I recall correctly, to pose this opinion that this change of time. Now, Sfarnu doesn't say that has anything to do with the age of the universe. Sfarnu's time it wasn't a matter of concern. He just says it in terms of the seasons. That's why the seasons began then, and they didn't begin, or they didn't exist earlier than that. Okay? Now, around with this is, of course, as Ron said, there are other ways of dating the age of the universe which would not have been affected by the Mabul, such as how you see how scientists perceive the universe expanding and the rate of expansion, which indicates that at one time, you know, many years ago, it was the point of the Big Bang. And also, I think what I would say is more down to earth, speaking, is that they tried under all sorts of laboratory conditions to try and change the rate of decay of those substances by which they measure the age of an organism. You know, they measure the amount of carbon it has, and the carbon-14 day, and they measure the amount of carbon it has to the amount of carbon-14, which is there, and the carbon-14 is radioactive, so it decays over time, right, and whereas regular carbon is stable, it doesn't decay, and therefore they measure the amount of carbon, regular carbon there to the amount of carbon-14, which is there, and the difference, they know the rate of decay, and that's how they come to date the thing in question. Well, they've never been able to change that rate of decay, even under intense, you know, laboratory conditions. So therefore, one would have to say the Mabul was an event which has no partner, has no similarity, is so radically, radically different than all other events which occur through the course of human history. And the third is pretty straightforward about what happened to Mabul. There was a lot of water, it got very hot, right, and things died. No, and not even everybody died. According to Medrash, Og managed to swim through the Mabul, right?
He was
swimming.
He was hanging on the thing.
He was hanging, but he didn't climb
on.
He was hanging on to the railing.
Uh-huh.
It was still in the water.
Was it boiling?
No, so obviously it wasn't that hot. The whole time, at least, or everywhere that people could survive.
And it was cold around the table.
Cold around the table.
Rashi says it's not. Are you sure?
Yeah.
I don't have any other commentary besides Rashi.
Rashi doesn't talk about Og having hung on to the table. He just says he survived. He survived. It was just, oh, he just
wasn't
says...
Wasn't Leviathan also, like, near something?
I don't know. Maybe it's down at the South Pole. It's cold. Who knows? Yeah. In any event... So therefore, this is an approach which is difficult to accept because, again, it makes an assumption that a process occurred, or I should say an event occurred which was a singularity which has never been replicated since.
So then the model says that the gates of Shemayim opened and the waters fell, and then it says that in addition to rain, and it says the flood swelled without the more rain. Like for 150 days, was it after the 40 days of rain, it says like the flood swelled and it got much more water.
Right.
But that's saying from the depth and from the heavens. But that doesn't necessarily, you know, what is that? Physically, that doesn't necessarily sync up to anything we know about.
Yeah, I don't think that Rashi, the way I understand that word, understood that word gavru, doesn't mean that they were growing for 150 days, but rather they were strong. Right, for 150 days, and it was intense, and they didn't begin to recede until after 150 days had occurred. That was always my understanding of how it worked. I'm mistaken, but that was why
it
never
happened. It says that, like, the Shemayim opened up, and it also says rain.
Yeah.
So, like, it would seem like to have that effect happen,
it could be
you're talking about, it would have to be something supernatural anyway.
Yeah. But, okay, right, so that it could be that, again, you can't disprove this. The beauty of this theory, as many other theories, is that I can't disprove it because in order to disprove it, I have to go back to the Mapple and say, look, nothing changed, and I can't do that. So therefore, you can always say to me, if you want to promote this theory, you don't know. Could it have happened in the Mapple, right? Who knows, right?
You could look at that meteor from Mars that hit after the Mapple.
Right. So this is certainly an approach which has no answer. In other words, you know, you can accept it or not accept it, but you can't disprove it, can't prove it either. So therefore remains, you know, an untested theory, which is of interest, but cannot be verified either from science or from Chazal.
If there were a worldwide cataclysmic flood, wouldn't there be evidence of it through science?
I don't think so. Because it was, let me rephrase that. I think there probably would be. But if I wouldn't find it, I would still assume that it occurred and assume that the scientists have not found it yet. Because you need to have evidence against something in order to say that it did not occur. If you haven't found evidence, it's not...
Simple enough. I mean, you've got a rough date. You go back 4,000 or 5,000 years in the fossil record and you see what was happening worldwide.
The fossil record doesn't differentiate that much in 4,000 or 5,000 years. You know, there are a lot of dead animals under the earth. There's a lot of dead animals, so you can't differentiate. Say, oh, all these animals died on the same day. If they died 50 years apart, so there's no way you'd be able to tell either, right?
But they seem to be able to date the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, plus or minus 3 million years.
Yeah, it's only a ballpark figure.
Right. We're talking about plus or minus 1 year. It's very
different. It's possible. What they do ask is the question on the model, though, what they do bring up is that there's no sedimentary record of it, which, in other words, you'd expect to have, and if you took a core...
One layer all over.
Right, you expect that in a core sample, which you sunk into the ground, say, in Babylon, I don't know if they've ever done it there, but we know the flood is supposed to have taken place. We don't know if the flood affected North America, right? We have no way of knowing. That the whole world was covered, but it could be the known world at the time, the civilized world. Star doesn't deal with North America, South America, Australia, right? There's nobody to be discussed. So therefore, we don't know where the Mabul occurred beyond the area described in the Chumash, which is the area around, you know, the land of Israel and Turkey and Iraq, where people were, the Fertile Crescent, where people were settled at the time. And also the Gemara says that the Mabul did not occur in the land of Israel. In the land of Israel is left, Mabul left, right? That, which obviously was miraculous because the water, the question is how the water stopped. How do we differentiate between the land of Israel and anywhere else? So there must have been a miraculous component to it. The water
Jordan never got a lot deeper in it.
Jordan was, so it's hard to know how the Mabul would have manifested itself and where it would have manifested itself in order to be able to take a sample. And also, my assumption, and maybe I'm wrong, my assumption is that, if you have an ice age, for, let's say, thousands of years, so it'll leave a mark. If something happens for the course of the year, I don't know how much of a mark it will leave in the record, right? Because it'll be a very fine layer. You know, when you take a core sample, run a stick into the earth, a hollow stick, and take a core, so I don't know how thick each layer is, right?
I think it's like this fucking million. It's pretty thick. It's like a lot of years.
Per inch,
yeah.
So I don't know how you actually, I don't know you'd actually be able to differentiate the marble. That's a question which they ask, and I don't know, I don't see other questions being so difficult.
I tell you, that's a very good point that I haven't heard before.
Which?
What you just said. And I never realized, I was thinking like, you know, oh, there should be something in the sedimentary record, something like that, and I realized, no, the whole thing happened in 40 days, or like less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens less than a year, the next storm would wash away, you know, you wouldn't necessarily see anything afterwards.
No. The problem I have with that is that the fecundity of the planet went down. That's why Noah had to ask for meat, and that's robust because it wasn't as productive as it was before. So if it wasn't as productive,
Noah asked for meat.
What?
Noah asked for
meat. Well, he asked to be able to have the bomb.
Not in my homeland.
What?
He didn't ask for meat.
When he got out.
He didn't ask for meat.
He told me.
Oh.
Yeah. He didn't ask. He sacrificed animals because he figured why would I have an odd number of animals if not to sacrifice them? But he didn't ask to eat meat. It was their granted. I forget where I saw the source. This is one of the major Jewish sources. That the reason why he was granted the right to eat meat is because they wanted to distinguish, because Hashem wanted to be able to distinguish between what's human behavior and what's animalistic behavior. But you should not put animals on a par with humans. And so whatever animals do, humans can do. No, humans are superior to animals, and therefore they have to act accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't recall ever seeing that Noah actually asked for it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so the fecundity of the earth hadn't changed. I don't know why this is so necessarily.
Well,
you know, it says
it was brought yesterday in the shiur that an interpretation, but that a lot of this topsoil would have to have been washed away for that.
Well, I have to have that somewhere. Well, right?
So you would have seen a huge layer. I mean, if it's a model, it would be a layer.
Right. That's only the... No, that's only...
You like the years from there, too.
It's only topsoil. Topsoil never gets into layers unless it sits.
Also, it wasn't... It didn't flow, the model. It didn't flow anywhere.
Nothing had filled. They all get saturated. When it recedes, I would imagine there's going to be flow, right?
I don't know, could have been that the hills were already had a lack of topsoil because they're hills, and over the years, so who knows?
There'd be a missing layer.
Really
there would be a missing layer instead of an added layer. You wouldn't have an added layer. You have a missing
someplace,
layer.
Someplace it would go someplace.
But the thing is, I'm bothered by the fecundity of the earth. I like that word, fecundity. I thought you were repeating it. I just wanted to say it. The issue of the... you can ask me words. If you like that word, you don't understand. But he says earth produced a lot of fruit before the marble, before the flood. Afterwards, it produced very little. I think that actually happened when Adam was kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Isn't that what happened then?
Yeah.
He was told, listen, it's going to be hard to grow. Till now you had a silver platter, you know. Now it's not going to work. Not only that, the Torah tells us that, rather interpretation of the Torah, but the interpretation of the Torah says that until Noah was the one who improved the situation. Because Noah was the first one to invent a plow. So Noah didn't have plows, so they always got thorns and thistles. Because that's what happens if you don't plow. If you don't plow, you get thorns and thistles. And Noah invented the plow, and that was the beginning of the end of the curse of Adam. Because from that time on, that a way of planting without getting thorns and thistles.
And the curse of Adam, that could be a locality thing. Like in the Garden of Eden, everything was fertile, and outside it was not. And he was cast out.
Right,
so the earth didn't necessarily change, it's just that he was cast out of the ninth location.
So, so I'm not sure.
Divine location, again, it's the opposite of the divine intervention and the opposite.
The opposite, what do you mean?
Gan Eden, Hashem took care of the place.
Right.
Outside of Gan Eden, Hashem let the place.
Hashem let it go.
Yeah.
So now, so far we've seen these two approaches, though. We've seen the approach which is reject science. And the second approach was the flood. Right? Flood changed everything. And the third approach is important to know that it is the approach of Lubavitcher Rebbe. The reason I say it's important to know is because if you ever ask Lubavitcher why the world looks old, you'll inevitably get this answer. The reason being, this is the answer given by the Rebbe.
He didn't invent the answer, but he
promoted the answer we're about to see, which is the world was created. Old. Right? The world state old means on day one, Adam, we know, was a fully formed human being. I don't know how old he was made. He was made 30 years old, 70 years old, or by the standards of time, maybe he was made 300 years old. But he was made old, right? He was made as if he had a history, as if he had been born X amount of years earlier. All the creatures which are born at this, which created on that day, were created to and fully formed, so if you had an observer seeing them from the outside at that point in time, that observer would assume that they were created X amount of years earlier, but born X amount of years earlier, yes, they had been created that day. The tree, right, that's the famous example and proof is the tree ring. The second proof, I should say, is associated with, in order to remember it, with the world's axis that is shifted. And this move, this response, the tree ring response. In other words, if you cut up in a mature tree, you can count the amount of rings in the tree to tell how old the tree is, right? Each year, there's another ring grows in the tree. So, and on the first day of Bereshit, right, we assume giant redwoods were created on the first day of creation, right? So you open the giant redwood, which is 6 feet across, right, on the first day of creation, what would you have seen? Thousands and thousands of rings. Hey! But it was just created today. So it was clearly, since it was created, fully formed, it was created with that history in it. So therefore, since you have a world, our world, which has fossil fuels, right? We use petroleum. We use oil, which comes from, current theory, from dinosaurs and other extinct animals which over the time became this petroleum. So therefore, if it's a fossil fuel, what has to be created with the fossil fuel? Fossils! So God put the fossils there, just like he put the rings in the tree, he put the fossils in the earth. Just like the tree fully formed requires rings in the tree, so too the fossil fuel requires fossils in the earth. You following? So therefore, anything in the world, not fossil fuels, anything which looks old, anything which looks old in the world, the stones themselves, right? Because a fully formed stone, it looks billions of years old. That's the definition of a mature stone, right? So everything was created that way on day one to reflect a fully mature earth. Okay? This is also a beautiful answer. The reason why it's a beautiful answer is, again, it can't be disproved. There's no way you can prove that it didn't happen this way. And the same way I could also argue with you, as Rabbi Ari Kaplan points out, he says the same way I could also argue with you, and you can't refute me, that we were all created 5 seconds ago.
With memory.
Right, with memory. In other words, none of us, even though many of us remember coming into this room at 4:30 this afternoon and looking for a marker or whatever else we did, so, nah! It never happened. It planted our collective memory that we came into a fully formed world where we're looking for markers. But in reality, we were just playing the play five times.
How many people did drugs in college used to think like that?
Huh?
How many people did drugs used to think like that?
We could have created... Did you hear a report about recent scientists who came out with the theory that people were holograms?
No, I haven't.
I saw the cover article. I never read it.
Really?
Okay,
I was just wondering if that fit into any of it. The falsest argument.
It's sort of the Matrix idea, the Matrix, which is entirely possible. But if you create a computer with the dots of Hashem, which is...
But how can you have a hologram which has internal organs?
No, that's all hologram.
What? It's all hologram?
It's basically like our minds are... Basically everything we feel and we think we see and whatever is basically nerve impulses to our brain. So if you had a situation where you could simulate those nerve impulses to our brain exactly the way real life sends signals to our brain, it would seem like real life even though it wasn't.
The
Matrix is like a divine message. Most people say Aisha Torah
uses the Matrix as an analogy for becoming a
Froom,
actually.
Which I thought was... Sorry. So I've never seen the movie, so I'm deficient on this
I
on this topic. Was there a book?
What?
Was there a book before the movie?
I think they made a book after the movie,
yeah.
It has a very Christian connotation at the end of the third movie, though. But I was discussing this topic with someone about that world looking old, And like one of the aspects of that is that to say that, you're also saying that there's a 5,765 light year bubble around the Earth that basically at the time of that is what the universe is. And at the time of creation, Hashem made light rays already in transit looking like something else coming through. But we're continuously seeing that today. So which means that Hashem basically is constantly pouring light rays that make it look like they're interfering past that. They're really not. But Hashem's constantly pushing in light rays from this 5,764 light year bubble.
That's interesting. Yeah, interesting issue. I like that.
Except what's interesting is that a bubble of 3,300 light years, I think, or roughly, is actually where the Oort belt is, where you have giant oceans of water floating around in space. We could probably do something with the model of the Shemayim and the water from, you know.
There are oceans of water in space?
Yeah.
Mostly frozen, but...
Mostly
frozen. Cool. Yeah. Well, you can ask my son, Asana, he'll tell you all about them. So the, these are three proofs again, three approaches, which one could take, and the last two approaches, certainly, as opposed to the first one, which against which evidence we brought to bear, the last two approaches are ones which, against which no evidence we brought to bear.
Except for two.
What?
Two doesn't take care of astronomy. Three does.
Yeah, it's true. Astronomy is a sort of issue, unless you say the whole heavens were, you know, affected by the model in some way, shape, or form.
But they were.
What?
But there are theories that would account for it, such as Stephen Hawking's theory of dark energy.
It could be. Right. Okay, so that, you know, I have to say something along those lines. Now, according to this, however, according to these two approaches, it's important to note there's no clear-cut application in Chazal of the principles which they use in explaining the age of the universe. Yes, there is this thing we find that the seasons, there existed seasons only after the Mabul, and therefore that you can say, well, it must be something changed at the time of the Mabul. For this, you could say everything was created the way the Chazal put it, b'komoson nibro. Everything created was created, koma means standing upright, fully formed. So therefore you can apply these sources, whether in Chumash or in Chazal, in the Gemara, to these two approaches. But the Chazal never applied this approach themselves. So they never said, you should know, the world is old, so because, you know, there's not going to change.
The
world is old, so what?
Did they ever think it was old? Chazal?
Yes.
Yeah? This was an issue?
No, it wasn't an issue, but they do speak about it. Okay? So so those are two approaches. These two approaches don't have an explicit source in Chazal. The third approach, which we have 2 minutes left, so we'll begin talking about it, continue on Wednesday, is that the theory, and this does have evidence in Chazal. This is evidence in the theory of cycles. Cycles means we are not the first cycle. Always get feeling creepy when I say that. But we are not the first cycle of existence on this earth.
Well, not
necessarily Gilgulim, because Chazal himself never mentioned the concept of Gilgulim. Kabbalists would say yes, it's the same people introduced over and over again in different ways. But the theory itself doesn't require that. So cycles mean that there were different cycles of existence prior to our existence in the world. And there is a Chazal, which we'll speak about next time we meet, to this effect, which says that there were 974 generations before Adam. Okay, so there's 974 generations before Adam. That doesn't actually look at us as several billion, but it gets us beyond 5,765. Right? Because that means that 5,765 starts with Adam, who was 974 generations after the first man, whoever the first man was. And then we have an entire history, which is, so to speak, or literally, beneath the surface, which you don't see. Now, this is why I think Chazal dealt here in this statement, which again we'll bring in on Wednesday, you know, show it to you. This statement, Chazal deal with the issue of the age of the universe, not because it was a problem, right? Nobody came to them at the time and said, listen, hey, guys, age of the universe, 5 and 14 dating, you know, what do you guys do with this? But this was a given by them, that the world is older than this world alone. We'll go through this again, as I said, Wednesday. There's a big issue in Kabbalah between different Kabbalists as to whether this is true or not true, but we'll leave that for next time.
How do people in group one look at the Chazal number four?
What?
People who just
they don't like science
and are ultra literalists.
They reject those midrash.
Oh, it's a midrash?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not a gemara.
It's not a gemara, it's a midrash.
Okay.
And that's already...